Good morning. Welcome to Mountain Money on a lovely day after Doug. A day of actual powder skiing yesterday. Unbelievable.
That might have been your last powder day of the season.
I think so, because we're looking for a warmer week all week long, heading into 62 degrees by Wednesday. So a warming trend, probably welcome by almost everybody, as it was a little chilly this morning.
Well, everything has a season. And well, the ski season, at least Deer Valley, is closing next weekend. I think the other resorts are as well.
Yep, it's all over on Easter Sunday, but it was an amazing season. Okay, so this is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and it's Mountain Money for April the 10th of 2017. Good show today. Interesting topics. Everything Park City loves: fancy cars, dogs, and fine dining. So we've got it all in one show today.
Good spin on it, Larry.
We're going to start with Daniel Shuloff, the author of Dogs, Dog Food, and Dogma. Now, Daniel has an interesting life story. He's an attorney, but he's not practicing anymore. His love of dogs has turned into a bit of a crusade for healthier dogs eating healthier food. So we're going to learn about what he's learned over the last several years about the food we put in our dogs.
Yeah, and I'll give a teaser as well. Daniel's going to talk about something that half the dogs in the United States suffer from, and it's the health equivalent of them smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. So it's quite startling. I've got that image of a cigarette-smoking dog in my mind, and we'll find out more in just a little bit.
Well, those are the dogs who sit around the poker table and are playing poker.
Yes, we've all seen that picture. And our second guest, Larry, mentioned fancy cars, and the cars he's referring to are the Teslas. And I think most people here in Utah know there's been a battle between Utah and Tesla. Tesla wants to be able to sell cars direct online. They actually sell a lot of cars directly to consumers. And Utah says they can't do that. And it turns out recently the Utah Supreme Court agreed with them. They upheld that decision. We're going to talk to State Representative Kim Coleman, who is a Republican from West Jordan. And we're going to talk to her about her involvement. And I believe it was in trying to make it easier for Tesla to sell cars here in the state of Utah, but we'll find out more from her. And then our final guest is going to be Sunny Wustenhoom, who runs an oil and vinegar shop over at the Junction, at Kimball Junction. We'll find out a little bit about that business as well. So you're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. Please stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Bob Dillon, a lawyer in the Park City office of Jones Waldo with 38 years of legal experience in complex real estate transactions. Proud supporters of KPCW, Jones Waldo provides local businesses with legal services in areas ranging from real estate to employment law. Our website is joneswaldo.com.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, presenting Viridian, 21 new residences along the 11th fairway of the Canyons Golf Course, with year-round amenities and gondola access. Summers on the fairway, winters on the slopes. More information at ViridianParkCity.com.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. We have Daniel Shuloff from Salt Lake here in studio with us this morning, the author of Dogs, Dog Food, and Dogma. He also owns a company called Keto Natural Pet Foods, and is going to be coming out. Well, and he has a dog toy company named Varsity Pets, and now he's launching Keto Natural Pet Foods. And Daniel, you came out of law in Atlanta, big firm, doing all the corporate stuff, I would imagine, and now you're selling dog toys. That's quite a change. So give the a short version of your evolution into a dog mogul.
Yeah, big shift, right? It sounds like an abrupt change, but it doesn't feel that way in retrospect, at least. So I was working at a leading intellectual property firm in Atlanta, and I had been there for 5 years, as I'm sure many if you have any attorney listeners out there, they'll tell you there's much to recommend about the job, but one thing that you can't say that is all that enjoyable is it's an incredibly demanding job, particularly for a young attorney at a major firm. So I was particularly attracted to the idea of passive income, sources of passive income, and businesses that could be run requiring relatively little work input from managers. And I came upon a fascinating book at the time, and this would have been 2010 or 2011, a book called The 4-Hour Work Week by this guy named Timothy Ferris, who's gone on to write several number one New York Times bestsellers. And he describes in the book basically how you can run an entire business from a laptop, how you can basically create a direct-to-consumer business model where you sell hard or intellectual products directly to consumers. And in the internet age, it can really be run from something as simple as a laptop with relatively little startup capital, and in a way that allows the manager the flexibility to move around the country and do lots of other things besides their business.
So thousands of people have read, perhaps tens of thousands of people have read Tim Ferriss's books. He's also got a great podcast that I recommend. But you actually took action. Most people read that and say, wouldn't that be nice? Talk to us about the early days of that. You read his book. You said, this sounds great. And there's oftentimes, if success at all, it's after a long path. What was that like for you in the early days?
Well, we bootstrapped the company. And I'll tell you, Tim and his wonderful book was certainly a motivating factor in getting Varsity Pets off the ground. But there's another very important motivating factor, too. And that's that I got my first dog in about 2010. And got him when I was a single guy, overworked, living in an inner city, you know, in a major city, no children. And so he became a very important figure in my life. He remains so to this day. My dog is named Cody. He's a big Rottweiler. And he's a fantastic guy. And I really felt motivated to do something that would invigorate me on a daily basis. And working with him and doing things that would help to improve his life really helped to motivate me to actually take the plunge. I had enough capital saved up personally from my law practice that I could keep myself afloat for a few years. So I didn't pay myself for the first about year of business when we were building out the structures that we needed in order for the thing to operate well and run on a really automated basis. But I'll tell you, it was a challenge. We had to be, every sale had to be return on investment positive from day one. We didn't have the luxury of burning through capital over time. You know, we couldn't advertise in a way where we said, well, look, this is going to be something that will pay off in a year. It's got to be, it had to be right away ROI positive. But fortunately, we live in an age where internet-based advertising is incredibly targeted. And so the different platforms, the Facebooks and Googles and Instagrams, all allow you to kind of crunch that data in different ways. But
let's tell the audience a little bit more. And let's start with first the Varsity Pets, varsitypetsonline.com business.
Yeah, the product.
What is the product?
Yeah, so what we sell are guaranteed indestructible exercise toys for dogs, for large breed, high energy dogs. So Rottweilers are a nice example. My dog is a polite member of society, but he benefits immensely from having a daily bout of exercise. It helps to keep his personality in check. Unfortunately, exercising a dog ordinarily requires a bit of human investment. You've either got to get out there and throw the tennis ball for him, tire out your arm, or go take him for a run and exert your own willpower to get out of bed and do that. So we thought we'd create something that would allow you to exercise your dog without having to do anything like that. So we sell, and if any of your listeners go to varsitypetsonline.com, you can see all the dozens of satisfied customer videos that we've received over the years. Basically, what happens is dogs will play with our guaranteed indestructible herding balls as if they're wrestling with another dog. So the videos are really tell the whole story, but basically what you see is dogs trying to push the thing with their paws, push the thing with their snout, and otherwise manipulate it, spinning in circles, running all around in a kind of full body exercise style way, all while their owners are just sitting there drinking their cup of coffee or checking their email.
I thought part of the part of the point was to walk your dog and,
well, look,
and exercise both.
Yeah, there's certainly something to be said for that as well. But there are lots of folks, who, myself included, who really, you know, my dog has had his one varsity ball for 5 years. And, you know, he got the very first one, of course. He still has it to this day. And, you know, he is a uniquely high-energy dog, but he loves it as much right now as the day he first got it, and it's still holding up just fine. It just makes sense. These certain kinds of dogs that have this kind of energy drive, it just makes sense to them.
Now, 10 years ago, it would have been really hard to find, cost-effectively, people that own Rottweilers, own types of dogs like this that would be your customer. The world's changed to your benefit. And now I imagine through Facebook and media channels like that, you can really get down and target that segment. The challenge is, we were talking in the green room with this idea. It's a great idea. You can target, you can sell them profitably. And there's probably a large enough pool of people getting new dogs that will always be a nice lifestyle business. Where the challenge, though, is once you have a customer, you want to continue to sell to them. And I know your other business, and I believe it's Keto Natural Pets? Keto,
yeah,
being ketosis.
Right. Correct.
Tell us about, and pet food is something you don't get much more recurring than selling somebody food. Tell us about that business.
Sure. Yeah, it's often said by industry analysts in the pet food space, it's a recession-proof industry. And whether that's true or not, I have seen good data suggesting that 50 to 70% of all dog food consumers are brand loyal. And obviously you gotta feed your dog his 2 or 3 square meals a day. And so, yeah, it's a, like you said, it's the very definition of a revenue recurring revenue business. And so our, you know, to a large degree, Keto Natural is an extension of Varsity Pets. It's a different business entity, but we've developed over the 5 years that we've been in business with Varsity Pets a certain amount of cachet with our customers. You know, they trust us. I publish our blog regularly. We've got tens of thousands of subscribers. I've gone ahead and written a book that serves as our kind of corporate manifesto. And so we don't view it so much as as too much of a leap to introduce a product to them.
And so there's a lot of boutique and natural dog food manufacturers out there, but your formula is different. What makes it different?
Yeah, so we're basically the world's first ultra-low carbohydrate kibble. So for a number of reasons, carbohydrates are not the healthiest nutritional substrate for small animals like dogs and cats. They spent 99.9% of their genetic evolution eating precisely zero carbohydrates. But today, if you go to your local PetSmart or even your local boutique pet store, and you walk down that massive pet food aisle with what appear to be dozens and dozens or hundreds of options, the underappreciated truth is that they're all basically stuffed with starchy carbohydrates like corn, wheat flour, potatoes, or rice. 50 to 75% carbohydrate for the most part. Our products are designed to be ultra low carbohydrate, less than 10% for each one of our kibble products.
And what's the difference? What have you found in your research that led to your book, that led to your dog food line?
Yeah, so the primary thing is that for my money, and this is all documented in my book, you can see all the science and kind of what leads to this conclusion. Carbohydrates make you fat. They contribute more to adiposity, you know, $10 word for body fatness. In dogs, as in humans, a calorie of carbohydrate contributes more to adiposity than does a calorie of protein or a calorie of fat. Effectively, the kind of short, simple explanation for why that's so is carbohydrate enters the bloodstream as glucose, as blood sugar. And the body, a dog's body, a human's body, can't tolerate too much of that in the bloodstream at once.
And that runs counter to what a lot of veterinarians would say, which is just a calorie's a calorie and the dog will burn it off.
That's right. Yeah. The kind of nutritional dogma in human beings and in our small animal companions is, like you said, a calorie is a calorie. And that really the canine obesity epidemic, and it truly is an epidemic, as you said during the intro, it's more than half the dogs in the country. So statistically speaking, if you're listening to this right now, we're talking about your dog. It's more, if you pick a random dog on the street, you're more likely to find one that's overweight than you are to find one that's a healthy weight.
What's the cost of your dog being a little chubby?
Yeah, well, so there are a lot of different angles, a lot of different lenses through which you can look at that. But as a dog owner, if somebody who has an emotional connection to their animal and wants it to live a good life because it reflects on their own personal happiness, the costs are tremendous. Their recent studies have shown that a dog that's just moderately overweight, so we're not talking about morbidly obese with belly dragging in the dirt, but with what a layperson would say, well, maybe he could afford to lose a few pounds. That dog, the health impact for that dog is worse than a lifetime of smoking is for a human being. It takes off something like 16 to 20% of the animal's lifespan, which is more than studies have shown a lifetime of smoking is average to do for a human being. So it's colossal. It's if you ask any veterinarian on the planet, and they'll tell you that right now the most worrying chronic disease epidemic in dogs and cats is obesity. It's hugely prevalent, hugely deadly.
Now, Larry was talking about most vets would say a calorie is a calorie. You would disagree with that. Now, in humans, when you eat carbs, it triggers what people have heard of as the insulin response, which makes us hungry. And, of course, we can open the refrigerator and get more food. Most dogs, unless they're extremely smart, can't do that yet. They'd love to be able to do that. So why does carbohydrates in a dog's diet lead to them being overweight?
Yeah, so you've got it. When there's sugar in the blood, there's a hormonal response that the dog's body goes through, just like your body goes through, in order to deal with that. The pancreas secrete insulin. Insulin causes a number of tissues to suck up circulating nutrients, suck up that glucose and get it out of the bloodstream. Most notably, it causes fat tissue to suck in that glucose. So in a dog's body, when you feed it carbohydrates, all of a sudden you got tons of blood sugar in the blood, and the insulin comes out and it sucks all that glucose into fat cells. It makes the fat cells literally get fatter. So what you get from carbohydrates that you don't get from proteins and you don't get from fat is an increase in that specific kind of tissue. So if you feed, it's often misunderstood that calories in and calories out is somehow inconsistent with the what's called the carbohydrate insulin model of obesity. But in reality, they're totally consistent. Of course, the number of calories in and the number of calories out have to balance for weight to be in equilibrium. However, the main difference is what kind of tissue is changing. So if you feed a dog carbohydrate, you're likely to see a swelling of the adipose tissue, the fat tissue, as opposed to the healthy lean muscle tissue.
All right. Well, that's good information. And now let's talk on the business side of things, on the dog food side. It sounds like you've got a nice niche there. It doesn't sound like you've got many competitors, if any, on that space. You're going to launch this in the summer. And there's a lot of good ideas out there, but it all comes down to execution. I would imagine distribution is really important for that to succeed. Now, with your dog toys, you're selling directly to the consumers. You're finding them on Facebook. You're finding them on the internet. They order directly. What's the model for the dog food?
Yeah, so there are two primary ways that dog food and treat products are distributed in America today. One is direct to consumer over the internet. Kind of the two most recent pet food startups that were able to go out into the venture community and get funding behind their enterprise are direct-to-consumer exclusively. Both of these concepts are effectively Blue Apron for dogs. It's we're going to deliver it to your door every week or every month, and it's going to be that simple. But that kind of subscription direct-to-consumer over the internet model actually goes well beyond startups like that. If you purchase your food through Amazon, Amazon Prime will ship it to you for free. Subscription-style model, just the same in the other major online pet retailer. It's called Chewy.com. They do the exact same thing.
But I'm guessing both of those channels are difficult for entrepreneurs. The Amazons of the world want to suck all the profit out of it if they can.
Yeah, they do take some out of it. We've Amazon's been a great partner for us and with Varsity Pets. We sell our toys through them, and you're right, they take a big chunk out of it, but they certainly open up a big distribution door. So it's been worth it for us. The other channel for pet food in the United States is traditional brick and mortar distribution. It's still it still makes up 85% of the market or more, and so it's still a significant component. So we're not doing one in our case with Keto Natural. We're not doing one to the exclusion of the other. we're really good. Our institutional expertise is in direct to consumer. We know how to market over the internet. We know how to deliver the stuff profitably. And it works well with a subscription style product like dog food. But it's certainly not the only, we're not doing one to the exclusion of the other. There's simply no reason for us to do it.
What about pricing? This seems like a premium priced product, and our dog owners not resistant to premium prices when it comes to their best friend?
Yeah, so in the pet food space, what is called the premium or ultra-premium sector of the market has been the fastest-growing sector for any of the past 5 years. So folks are increasingly willing to pay relatively significant prices to feed their dog what they perceive to be a quality food. What amounts to premium in the pet food industry is what it can be kind of shocking. In reality, even the most expensive kibble, so the fanciest, most expensive kibble product that you can find out there right now on a per-calorie basis, is still something like 1/8 the cost of a Big Mac from McDonald's. So it's easy for...
And there's a lot of calories in a Big Mac.
Indeed. Indeed. So right now, if you believe, as I believe, that carbohydrates are bad for dogs, that they contribute to obesity and contribute to any number of other health-related problems, your only real option right now is to feed a raw-style product. So this is a very small sector of the market. Foods are sold either frozen or in a dehydrated state, but they don't have any kind of starch component to them. They're basically meat and meat alone, and they definitely have a following. Unfortunately, they're something like 6 to 10 times as expensive as a premium kibble. So they are totally cost prohibitive.
You have a Rottweiler.
Yeah.
And what would you tell people the cost per day is to feed a Rottweiler on your product?
Yeah, so Keto Natural basically is going to compete at a price point with brands that many of your listeners may already be familiar with, things like Blue Buffalo. We're going to be basically competitive at that kind of price point. And at the end of the day, you're looking at something like $2 a day. So we're not talking about any kind of grand re-evaluation of what your perception of pet food value is. For the most part, you're going to be feeding our main value pitch is to folks who are already feeding their dogs something like Blue Buffalo, very popular but high-end product. We're going to be able to compete at that price point and provide a meaningfully different, meaningfully healthier product.
And your whole goal was to find a business you could run anywhere in the world off of a laptop. Yeah. Now, you're going to need a manufacturing plant and a distributor and all of that. But you say you've never even been to the pet toy factory or distribution center. You truly.
In fact, I was joking with him, right? He said it's a well-oiled machine, and I said you have no idea if it's a well-oiled
it
machine.
It could be all chaos.
You know, what you know is it gets there on time.
No complaints.
But that's kind of the beauty of your business,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's relatively low stress in that sense. So to be clear, my goal at Varsity Pets was very much to do exactly what you just said, was to let it to develop something that was so automated that it could run itself and I could spend time, you know, enjoying the Wasatch Range or spending 4 years of my professional life researching and writing a book. I was able to do that while being the sole manager for Varsity Pets because it was kind of constructed in that way. That's not our goal with Keto Natural. That's not at all our goal. I've kind of gotten through that phase in my life. I've produced the book, which was a major professional goal of mine, and now we're ready to really sink our teeth into something that fits in a more traditional high-growth type of business model.
Okay, so you have suffered through, or maybe you enjoyed law school, a lot of hard work going to law school and getting that first job and working the hellacious hours they give to the juniors at a law firm. So you've been through all of that, and now are you forsaking the law for dog food?
Well, I'll tell you, I feel like, maybe I'm attuned to it, but I feel like I use my law school education and my legal practice every day of my business life. I mean, I loved it. You smiled when you said you worked hard through law school. It certainly was hard work, and the law practice is certainly hard work too, but it was intellectually hugely enjoyable. I mean, I look back on my law school experience, even though it was very expensive, with tremendous gratitude. I had an absolutely wonderful experience, and I do feel like I use it every day in negotiations with vendors and partners, in thinking about issues of corporate structure.
It's fun to learn complex things, and law has that characteristics. A lot of different industries do, and you know, people are like, why do you work so hard in college? It is hard work, but it's also, as you said, very intellectually stimulating. Before we let you go, we are a business show. I want to circle back to the business and this Tim Ferriss motivating you to start this lifestyle business. I think we have a lot of people here in Park City that say, boy, if I could start something like that and make $100K a year and work 10 hours a week keeping it going, they'd love to do that. So before we let you go, what advice, obviously I would imagine the first thing is read Tim Ferriss's book, but what advice would you give them on getting going?
Yeah, so for me, it was the way when I, again, in retrospect, the way I think about my story is that the big hurdle, the kind of inflection point, was becoming mentally committed to the fact that I was going to do this, that I was going to assume the risk of failure. And it's impossible to deny that the base rate for failure for startups is high. It's, you know, it's 3/4 or more of all startups are going to fail. For me, I was able to say what I was able to think as realistically as I could about what that would look like for me. If I spent 2 or 3 years on this project and it didn't go and it just went to zero, what would my life really look like? And I tried to get emotionally in touch with how that would feel. And I just got comfortable with it. I said, okay, I'd probably incur some personal debt. I'd incur, you know, some debt that I'd have to work off for the years after that. But I was able to say what felt reasonably at the time, I've got an education and a resume that I can fall back on, that if it fails, I've got a backup plan. I was able to get my personal finances in order that would allow me to some degree to feel comfortable that failure wouldn't be a life-changing event for me. It would be disappointing, but it wouldn't be a life-changing event. And so I guess what I would recommend to listeners is that you conduct that personal self-evaluation and you think about what going to zero would look like for you. Because unfortunately, it's a possible outcome. It's a likely outcome, but it for me, I was able to get to a point saying it's not the end of the world. We often build things up, ideas of failure up to be more than I think they really end up feeling like. And so there are plenty of we all have something to lose if we go to zero. But if you can kind of get yourself mentally committed to the fact that that's not going to be the end of the world for you, then I found that to be really empowering. I found it to be really empowering and allowed me to kind of take that leap.
Well, that's great advice. It's also a great note for us to end on. Our guest this morning has been Daniel Shuloff. He is the author of the book Dogs, Dog Food, and Dogma. He's also the founder of VarsityPetsOnline.com for large, indestructible dog toys. And soon you'll be able to find his dog food, sounds like both on the internet as well as in retail locations, Keto Natural Pets Food. Daniel, thank you for joining us this morning.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Daniel. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Tesla and why you can't go to a dealership and buy a Tesla in Utah. It has to do with Utah law that some legislators are trying to change so far without success. So we will be back to talk about that. We're headed to a high of 47 degrees today. Low of 27, again chilly, but then the rest of the week is going to be a big-time warm-up. So we will be back with more Mountain Money after this.
This is Allison Kulo with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with benefits, from lodging projections, educational videos, group sales leads, and a listing on the top travel site for Park City, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining can be found at visitparkcity.com, or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We are on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. That was a good conversation with Daniel. I think some people at the beginning may have thought, if you'll pardon the pun, the show's going to the dogs. But that was really an interesting conversation. Up next, we have on the phones State Representative Kim Coleman. She's a Republican from West Jordan. And the legislature is working, as Larry teased before we went to break, on changing the rules so that firms like Tesla can sell direct to consumers.
I think it's more they're working not to let the law change.
Well, we'll find that out. Kim, welcome to Mountain Money.
Good morning.
Good morning. So explain to us what what your colleagues in the legislature are trying to do. I made the case that you're trying to make it easier for Tesla to sell cars in the state of Utah. Is that true?
That's true. That's true. So what we have is a decades-old franchise law that prohibits a manufacturer from selling their cars directly. They're required to engage a third-party dealership franchise. And so Tesla enters the market in the last several years, and that's not their business model. They don't engage a third party. They sell their vehicles made to order and direct to the consumer. But we have this little problem in Utah, and in fact, a lot of other states have that same, very similar laws that prohibit direct sales of new automobiles.
So, Kim,
in 2015, we tried to change that and create a different path for some of our new car companies that are just looking at different ways to distribute and sell their product.
So, Kim, that probably sounds very archaic to a lot of people, but tell us what the origin of that law was. Why did it develop initially? Because there was a good reason for it.
Right. There was a good reason for it. So you know, some of these dealership laws really are about 100 years old, and they came about because you had Detroit. I like to say Detroit versus State Street. So, you know, Detroit and auto manufacturing world really didn't have a way to mass distribute and sell the vehicles. So you had the mom and pops locally pop up that were willing to sell the car. And over time, as the dealership model developed across the country, there was a lot of power at the bargaining table in Detroit. And Detroit could then, if you listen to the auto dealers, they at times were abused, treated unfairly, treated disparately. One dealership from another, and there was a lot of control from outside of the state that could then impact these local dealers, which do have a strong impact and influence on our local economies, and they're the job providers. Our new car sales currently in Utah represent about 17% of the sales tax revenues, and so these are, you know, these local companies needed some types of protections against that inequitable bargaining power with Detroit. So that's why we saw these laws come about over, you know, again, about 100 years. And the pendulum swung to some degree that now, you know, in the states, the dealership laws are much, much stronger and really favor them. So you then have some new companies pop up that say, well, we don't want to be there at all. It's we want to sell directly and we want to avoid the whole franchise system. So what we've really looked at doing is just creating a path that represents the new way of doing business while still keeping some of those protections in place that State Street still may need to some degree.
Yeah, and you're a Republican. Republicans obviously control all houses of the legislature and the governorship as well, and have for some time. And I would think, at the core of Republican values is the free market. Let the free market be unfettered. And if somebody has a new idea for a way to cut out the middleman and provide a product direct to consumer from the factory, it seems like something the legislature would embrace.
You know, it does. I was actually very surprised in 2015 when that bill did not pass. But you also, you know, once again, it's a big chunk of the state's sales tax revenue. And and you've got people in districts that are employed by these dealerships, and they're, you know, they fear for their jobs, they fear for that particular way of life under that business model. And I think it's like with any disruption, there's some fear that comes along with that. And we have to work on educating the community, educating the people, and working with the legislators to make sure everybody fully understands this issue. Even within that dealership franchise model, there are contracts that govern those relationships between Detroit and State Street that should govern themselves and regulate themselves as a choice in a free market. And for some of these companies that don't choose to do that, you know, I believe they should be allowed to do it. The question is, can you get the votes in the legislature that overcome the fear and concerns that may be real, or maybe they are obsolete?
Yeah, I don't understand what the resistance was, because certainly, you know, Tesla has that empty dealership at 23rd and State, basically I-80 and State Street in Salt Lake. And if they're allowed to operate, they would be servicing broken down Teslas if they break down. I mean,
they don't break down very much.
you know, we have the editors of Consumer Reports on a couple times a year talking about their car issue, and on a 100 scale, they rated Tesla 101. So
maybe
that is the case that they don't break down. But nonetheless, anybody who sells cars, even if it's a factory, is still going to need all those employees, aren't they, to run the dealership and repair the cars and have the body shops to take out the dents?
Exactly. I mean, that's what I wonder if, you know, State Street, that State Street model doesn't go away entirely, but it adapts. You know, do we look at how the franchise and dealership model could possibly adapt? But, you know, there's, you know, the vote was pretty close, and I think that we get a good bill this year where we've got strong support in the legislature. We've seen quite a bit of disruption on existing models, whether it's 1-800 contacts or Airbnb or food trucks. We really are. This legislature is looking at creating more free systems, more free market systems, and I think this is the next one. We really need to get this one done.
Yeah, we need to get it done, and we need to do it right. I was unaware that new car sales represent 17% of the source of state income tax. So obviously, the state has a vested interest financially in getting this right. Now,
that's right. That's right.
Is that relevant to this discussion, though? If Tesla were to sell cars directly, do they have a nexus in the state of Utah? I would imagine because of the dealership they do. But would Utah residents be paying Utah sales tax if Tesla could sell directly?
So currently what happens is people are currently buying a new Tesla out of state, but they do pay the surcharge at the time of registration. So Utah does receive that sales tax on the car. The thing we miss out on is the presence of an innovative business with jobs in our own state, and I think that's unfortunate. I think that's a label that Utah does not want. We generally regard it as a very business-friendly state, but this is one sector where we have told multiple companies, Tesla's not the only one, it's the one we talk about, but there are several that can't sell their cars directly in this state, and that I don't think that is a label that we want to have. We want to have the big welcome mat. Come to our state, sell your legal product, and under the business model that you think is best for your consumers, and we figure out how to get there. But it is a very real consideration of a number of the legislators that, you know, we have a lot of investment in the dealers. And a lot of jobs there.
I presume the dealers are also heavy political contributors to members of the legislature.
You know, I don't know. My personal experience is that there's not a lot of individual corporate money that flows around in campaigns. But, you know, they are very present in your community. They're the name on your Little League, you know, sponsor shirt. I mean, they're very active contributors to the community. So those things really do come into play when, you know, as a legislator, I get calls and emails from constituents, and I listen to them. And some of them are employees of dealers. And,
yeah. And I'll put in a quick plug for Larry H. Miller. He's done a lot for the state of Utah to make this a better place to live, him and his family. So I completely agree with you. There is a lot of residual benefit from getting all of this right. What's the current state? So the legislative session has ended for the year, and the next one's 10 months off, 11 months off. Do things happen between sessions, or is it likely at least a year
away? Oh, absolutely. My phone's been ringing. We've had already several conversations on what the next steps are here. The plain language of the ruling, though, it looks like that Tesla, in creating a Utah subsidiary, that may be their problem with the court case, was that they sort of look like a franchise and applied under what looks like a franchise model, only not fully complying with the franchise law. So it may be that Tesla has a different way to apply altogether, where they don't create the subsidiary, or we may still need to change this law. So we're coming back to the table, many of the stakeholders, and looking at if it's our understanding that we need to change the law, let's start talking again, and that's already in process.
Well, Kim, unfortunately, we need to leave it at that, but we thank you for joining us, and I also want to thank you for your service as a state representative.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our guest this morning has been Kim Coleman. She is a Republican state representative from West Jordan. Please stay tuned to Mountain Money. Up next is going to be Sunny Wolstenholm, who runs an oil and vinegar business over at the Kimball Junction.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and company support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. Into our last segment now, let's talk about food preparation and fine dining and how you can make that happen in your own home by buying the right oils and vinegars. We have Sunny Wolstenholm in studio with us, who has opened Oil and Vinegar Junction at Kimball Junction. Talk a little bit about this business, Sunny. Stores like this seem to be popping up now. Are people discovering the joys of not going to the supermarket and instead finding better stuff elsewhere?
Stores like this are definitely trending right now. I think what somewhat has spearheaded it is just the look for quality product, and you definitely can taste the difference. When you don't know different, the grocery store is okay and you enjoy it. But if the opportunity opens itself up and you try something different, it's genuinely really, really hard to go back.
Okay, explain the range of products and where do you find them?
All of my stuff's imported, so my vinegars are coming out of Italy. When they're brought to the States, then they're infused with flavor, and then I'm able to pick what it is that I want to put on my shelves. My infused olive oils use a Tunisian base oil just because it has a very fruity, buttery, mellow flavor, so it doesn't compete with the other flavor that I'm putting in with it. And then I've opted to bring in a few varietals. One is from Italy, one's from Greece, one's from Chile, and then I have the Tunisian there as well.
Okay. And are these mostly for salad preparations, or is this for all sorts of cooking.
All sorts of cooking. I have a butter-infused olive oil, so you can get the joy of tasting butter without having to have the calories of it, which is really, really great for cooking vegetables in or eggs in it or anything you like with that extra flavor. Otherwise, you can marinate. You can, honestly, it's as much imagination as you have.
So talk to us about the vinegar. I think a lot of people would be surprised to see the craftsmanship that goes into making a quality vinegar. It's a lot like winemaking. How does vinegar get made?
It actually is really, really similar to winemaking. It goes through a pretty close process as far as pressing it and getting the juice out of it. That's where it starts to differ. Your wine, you're wanting it to ferment. The vinegar, you're not wanting it to. So as soon as they get the juice out of that, they're putting it and they're cooking it right away to slow that process. And then in order to age it, your wine, you're keeping it cool. It goes to the cellar. Your vinegar goes to the attic. You want that warm, and then it moves. To do the vinegar, they move it through barrels over time and age it. So then it's similar to wine. It pulls the flavors of the wood and just creates a unique product.
So my knowledge of olive oil and vinegar is very limited. And on the vinegar side, you know, the higher quality to me is the balsamic vinegar, and that's where my knowledge ends. What is balsamic vinegar and what makes it that?
It needs to be a specific kind of grape. It's a Trebbiano grape. Traditionally, it's supposed to be coming out of Modena, Italy. That's where mine's coming out of. And then it just has a certain aging process. A really, really good quality balsamic vinegar like that, for a small bottle aged 12 years, it's going to cost you a couple $100s. That's something you just drizzle. You would never cook with it. You would never do anything other than just enjoy it very, very sparingly by itself. It has great sweetness. It gets sweeter as it ages. Mine is aged about 3 to 4 years. And so it's something that you can still get the great flavor with, and it's definitely better than you can find it on the grocery store shelf or anywhere else, but it gives you the flexibility of being able to use it daily. You know, a $200 bottle of vinegar, you just... That's a special occasion. This lets you indulge.
I don't want to scare off the audience. So what are kind of the price ranges of bottles of vinegar and bottles of oil?
Mine are 18 in my store, pretty much across the board. It's 18. I offer it in a big bottle, and then I have it in a small one. That's $9 as well. The small one's just nice if you're traveling and want to take it somewhere with you, or if you just want to try it out and make sure you're going to take it home and you're really going to be able to figure out how to use it.
So how are you helping customers learn about the different oils and vinegars? Do you have classes or tastings? I don't know. Can you taste it out of a cup? And
yes.
and I don't know. If you get it full strength, is it a bit much?
You know what? The vinegar actually is very thick and sweet by itself. It obviously, with what's in it, some of them can linger a little more tart than other ones. It doesn't bother me. I put it in a cup and I just throw it back and drink it. And that's what everyone who comes in my store, they get to do it just like I do it.
It's very similar, your business model. You know, you can go out and buy an inexpensive cup of coffee. You can run to McDonald's if you want that. You can brew it at home, or you can go someplace that makes a nice cup of coffee. And I put vinegar and I put olive oil in that category. You know, in my home, a bottle of vinegar lasts about a month. Mm-hmm. And so for $10 more, I can get a high-quality vinegar as opposed to something off the shelf. Now, what about... You said it's kind of in vogue now, the business that you're in. Are there other oil and vinegar stores in town? And how did you think about whether if there's room for another one?
There actually is another one on Main Street. It's Mountain Town Olive Oil. I had gotten some for my brother, and he had shipped it to me out of Minnesota. And that was kind of my introduction to it as a Christmas present.
The capital of high quality olive oil is Minnesota.
I'm from Minnesota. I don't remember
Minnesota
any.
Minnesota is fabulous.
Do they grow olives in Minnesota?
No, they import theirs as well. I'll let that go and we'll still be friends. Minnesota's great. Anyways,
I'm from Ohio, so take no offense.
Hey, I'm a part-time Minnesotan, so watch it.
But he had sent it to me, and I tried it, and I think that's what showed me what the great difference is. I think, of course, there's a concern. Is there room enough for two of us in town? I kind of feel that she's on Main Street. I'm kind of promoting, I guess, more people who are coming out of Heber was my thought. I get quite a few people out of Evanston who come in my store, Camas Valley. And then just, I think, I guess more
locals than tourists are on, are shopping on Main, and locals are shopping at Kimball Junction.
Yeah. And so I guess my thought is that we're kind of moving and segmenting and meeting needs for different markets.
Okay. Well, where is the store exactly? And are you online? Do you try to sell products elsewhere?
I am working online right now to get my shopping cart up on there. My store is actually right by the Smiths. I'm to the west of it, so I'm in the strip with like the UPS store, the dry cleaner, Tressa's Consign and Design, and right in between her and Asian Full House Bistro. So I'm working on getting it online. I'm also working on getting a YouTube channel up and going where I'm just do like a quick tutorial with a recipe to show you if you take this, this is something that you can do in your home with it. And for convenience sake, we say you don't want to pick it up at the grocery store, but actually I've partnered up with the market. So that when people are in a hurry, if you want something that's quality and you're just grabbing your other stuff, that you are able to grab it there.
I think that's smart. You know, get it where people are shopping already. And if they want to come into the store, they can do that as well. Well, Sunny, we thank you for joining us. Sunny is the proprietor of the oil and vinegar shop over at the Kimball Junction.
Thanks for joining us. And we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Just a couple of minutes left. We've gone from dog food to olive oil with a little Tesla thrown in between. You know, Doug, I don't know if you were around, but there was a similar experiment Ford tried. They asked all the dealers of Ford products in Utah and basically Ford bought them all and let them run as individual dealers. And if you were a Ford shop and didn't want to throw in with Ford, you didn't have to, and a few stayed independent. And that was called the Utah Auto Collection. And that was a big bomb.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. That's why that law to protect the dealers is in place to begin with, is because of that imbalance of power that Kim was talking about. I want to make sure we save time to thank our great sponsors of Mountain Money. We couldn't do this show without our sponsors, and we thank them. Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, All Resorts Express, Park City Mountain and Apex Residences, and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties.
Yeah, and we want to thank our guests who made this a fun show. Daniel Shuloff, the author of Dogs, Dog Food, and Dogma. And also, I got to reach over here to remember the name of his dog
VarsityPetsOnline.com.
VarsityPetsOnline.com is where you can find his product, and also Representative Kim Coleman, who's trying to get that law changed so Tesla can open up and have a dealership of its own.
Will be interesting to see what happens. You know, last week was an interesting week in the market too, Larry. If I had told you last Friday, you know, the jobs report came out. If I had told you last Monday, I'm sorry, jobs report came out Friday. If I told you it was going to miss by almost 50%. What would the market do? I think we both would have thought that the market was down. But the market really did not react to the news, which I think is healthy for the market. I mean, it's really being driven by companies are doing well now. The economy is doing well. Companies are doing well. And that's what's driving what we're seeing in the stock market.
Yeah. And I want to thank our third guest, Sonny Wollstonehume from Oil and Vinegar in Kimball Junction. And that's on that strip shopping area to the side of the Smith's store. So That's about it for Mountain Money. We are under partly cloudy skies and headed to a high of 47 today with a low of 27, so still chilly at night. We're getting into the 50s tomorrow, into the 60s by Wednesday, 65 by Thursday. So, and then a chance of showers at the end of the week as ski season ends. This is KPCW.